Architecture Talks, the podcast about architecture from Jung.
There are some ugly houses that need a lot of love now to create something new out of it.
At the end of March, after a two-year break, the Jung Architecture Talks were once held again in Hamburg in cooperation with the design magazine Häuser. The slogan for the event was "Make more of it," reflecting a topic that is more relevant than ever. Maintaining existing buildings, refurbishing them, and adapting them to changing requirements in terms of living comfort, spatial organization, and energy efficiency not only makes economic and ecological sense, but also conserves resources and is more sustainable than building new buildings. Koen Beyens and Basil Groof from Ghent in Belgium were also present as winners of the Häuser Award 2022. Time to pick up the conversation again and talk about the wonderful work of Groen Beyen Architects. We are Diane and Nicole. Koen and Basil, welcome to our podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, for our listeners who don't know you yet, GBA, Groh and Beyens Architects, was founded in 2005 in Ghent, Belgium. The office is active in the fields of architecture, interior design, and product design, and over the past 15 years has developed an independent architectural and design language. The focus of the office work is in Belgium and ranges from single-family homes to office buildings and design furniture. A quick look at your website shows that no two projects are alike. What can a client expect when they choose you?
The adventure. What we like to do is each project, we approach it from the same point of view, is that, or we try to find something that connects the plots by all the parameters we have. That means a lot of budgets, orientation, of course, the program. And we are always looking for the right questions, actually. Only through these questions, we try to formulate a probable answer. And we use all kinds of methods to test what we are doing. So because all the parameters are each time different, we strongly believe that the answer can't be the same. So the signature is not really the physical part of it, but more on the approach itself. So because everything is different, the result is, of course, is different. So that's what we like about it.
So in our pre-talk, you said something really pretty cool. We take on the tasks that others don't want to. That is an unusual, but undoubtedly exhausting strategy, right?
That was especially our strategy in our first years, because we believed here in Belgium there was a very good atmosphere to be working on architecture. A lot of clients wanted to have nice buildings or relevant buildings. So as young architects, when we started our firm 15 years ago, there was a lot of work. The only thing you had to do or you want to do is you take the crumbles from the bigger offices. What we mean by that is that the projects that are too small for the well-known architects at that time, smaller budget or more difficult plots or more difficult demands from the clients. And those were the projects that we found really, really interesting. And those were also the projects that helped us to get our own vision and our own style that we start to work with.
Maybe it's also, I'm just guessing, but these big offices, usually they have a lot of personnel, staff. They need to be efficient. We didn't need to be efficient at that time. Just wanted to make good things. And so people came to us, people who were getting any answers from the other offices, we were pretty happy to do them. And because all these difficult projects helped us in developing our own vision about it, we continued doing that. Very difficult plots or beautiful view to the north and the sun is coming from the front where you need some privacy towards the streets, or just too big a program and a too small plot. That's something that triggers our imagination. We usually don't know what we're going to end up with, but we find it really interesting to get started with.
And the clients had the chance to speak to the two founders and be like
completely in the discussion with you, no?
Yes, and that's something we still do today as well. Clients come to our office. It's still Basil and I that are doing the first design, the talks with them. In a later stage, our team joins the meetings. But it's always Basil and I who are doing the design. The clients appreciate that.
Yeah, I could imagine. Mm-hmm.
They are also very open to ideas once they are in this dialogue with us.
Yeah, we're continuously working together. Even though, for example, after the building permission, one of us is doing the project together with one of the staff members. The other one at the office is always overseeing or joining the conversation, but internally. It's not always that, for example, I'm on the discussion table or the meeting table with the clients that Koen is doing, but I'm always aware of what's happening and all the struggles we have during the process. I'm asking feedback. He's asking feedback just sometimes to help to see through all this information that's coming in and the difficulties with contractors, with clients, with budgets. And that's our strength. So that's something we want to keep in this designing process. I call it design process because it never stops. Only when it's built and finally built and given over to the client, then the design process stops for us.
So it seems that iterative dialogue is very important to you. And before a project gets underway, the right questions have to be found. And of course, then the right answers. Once the question have been asked and the answers start flowing, everything is carefully examined again and again. That's what you explained before. How often did something completely different ultimately emerge than it was thought of at the very beginning?
It's almost every time. Even when we have an assignment and we think it's going to be a very logical answer, we know the situation or we know these questions. We both have the feeling that that will be the answer. Something comes along that makes us go in a totally different direction. And that's a very frustrating part about designing, but it's also the part we love because you never know where you end up.
And we're not looking for the same answer twice also. Sometimes you have an answer that could be quite close to the previous one that you formulated maybe 2 years or 3 years ago, but still we feel like maybe we should look further into this. And it's always in combination with other parameters from the clients, from the budget, that helps us to establish this idea that we could look further into it. And then we're in a design process and we don't know where we're going to end. Although we have done something similar, really it's a painful struggling, but at the end, it should be okay.
Most of the discussions we have is being very critical about the project that's on the table. And asking ourselves, why doesn't it work? Why doesn't it feel good? 20 times, that is the discussion. And only one time it is, this feels really good. Most of the time is the frustrating part. How come the previous project, it worked really well, this solution, but in this case, for some reason, it doesn't feel good. It doesn't fit the building. And then you start discussing and discussing.
But isn't it more about passion than frustration? Because you want to achieve the very best solution, no?
Well, the frustration part, it's not a bad thing. We recognize it. We know it's a part of the design process. And you have to feel a bit grumpy that it's not fitting right and with this stupid building and what's the problem. And then after this discussion, then all of a sudden, the puzzle fits together sometimes, most of the time.
It's always based on this sort of gut feeling. Although this gut feeling is also based on a lot of knowledge you have, architectural history, your own history, everything. But it's the subconscious that tells you it doesn't fit, it's not right. And just by looking further into it, you can pinpoint why it is. But in the beginning, it's just feeling it. And for us, architecture is about feeling. It's creating, of course, a practical use of a building. But again, you want to strive to get these emotions. So this gut feeling is always based on that. And we try to look further until everything fits together. And then again, also when the solution is there or it feels right, it's from the same point of view. And then again, you're going to rationalize it and see how we can manage to make it into a real building.
Sober but brutal. One can see the pure joy in the combination of material types, structures, and light in your projects. The known is fragmented, and put together in a new context. How do you go about this?
What we like to play in our architecture, and especially in our interior, is that we use constructive elements and raw materials, and we are not afraid to show them into the interior. Not because just of a style thing, but it's because we really like to show what the project is about or to show what the design is about. Because you have the context is what makes the design. And then if you can show this design through the construction part, then you have a really interesting throwback or connection with the context and the interior.
Yeah, it's about also the honesty of the construction method. Hein? You get texture, you get feeling, you get a lot of things by working just by the rough construction, the brickwork, concrete, how you treat the concrete, how you treat the brick. And this honesty, we like to put it in the whole thing from the interior to the architecture, to the context, how it works together. It's much more difficult because working with plaster, sometimes it's really easy. If you miss something, you put the sockets somewhere else, it's not a problem, you just plaster it. So it makes it technically much more difficult. Yeah, just this honesty is something we like to strive to have it in all the layers of the architecture.
You also try out things for yourself. The brick wall I can see behind you, it's in your office and it's a prototype for a private house. So why do you do this?
But it has two different reasons. And the house itself is because we wanted to make a spiral staircase in bricks. And so we didn't want to have it chamfered too much on the outside. So we used the bricks in the other direction. And so we cut them in two. And then we saw that it's really beautiful. So this aesthetics of this interior from the spiral staircase, it's something we used here, but here it's for another reason, is the acoustics. Because in our new office, we implement a lot of energy into the acoustics. So the ceiling is absorbing, and to have a lot of square meters that could help us get good acoustics, we use this brick as a sort of refraction wall. So the sound is refracting in thousands of pieces, so it bounces back much less, so it helps us. So sometimes a visual result has different reasons to implement it.
So one trademark of the new Flemish architecture is the virtuoso handling of the existing. Old and new also find a successful balance with you. What stays and what goes? Have we forgotten to appreciate the intangible value of things?
That's something we really try to do, is to appreciate what's already there. And it starts with the context. So when you visit a house, can be in a rural context or in the city, you try to see what's already there and to appreciate it. Sometimes it's not really a beautiful view, but it's an interesting view. Or sometimes you can imagine what's between the house on an upper level and try to connect the vistas you can have on a few hundred meters, but also really close by. And we do the same thing in our renovations or refurbishments. Sometimes a staircase that's not really a sexy staircase, but it's on a good spot. For example, we had a project with veterinarians. The house was made by the father. He put a lot of time and effort in this staircase. And just out of respect, we reused it. But by making the room around it different, it felt completely different, although it was exactly the same staircase. Finding things that are interesting, although for most people they would throw it away, is something to manage the budget, manage the architecture itself.
Well, we also believe that keeping some parts of the existing and learning to look at it in a different way and appreciating what is actually there, it helps us also to make a connection with the surrounding, with the context, with the environment, with the little village where we are building. Sometimes it's more easy to put in something very modern and in contrast with the existing. But if you can play with what is already there, it's also a nice gesture to the street, to the neighbors, that you appreciate the street, you appreciate the little hamlet where you are building in. And if you do something quirky then, something a bit strange, people look at it with much more interest because they don't feel that you are against them or that you don't like how they live. You are trying to be a part of it and still maintaining your own identity.
And it's a very nice way to explore things in a new way. Even though they know it from the past, they see it in a new surrounding, in a new context, and they are like kind of positively surprised.
Mm-hmm. We had it, for instance, with the pitched roof a couple of years ago, or 5 or 10 years ago. Everybody wanted flat roofs because that was modern.
Yeah.
And we started to get interesting again in pitched roofs because we noticed that it helped us to create something that is more gentle in the environment. It helps to reconnect with the neighbors. And we believe, although we really love to make modern architecture, we also have a responsibility to create something that is a part of a bigger whole.
What's interested us also is because we do a lot of renovations, we try to love or appreciate what's there. That pushes us in a certain direction that helps us again with the new construction. Because by reusing stuff, you are pushed into a certain direction. You learn a lot as an architect from these cases. And this type of room or space you work on, you bring it back again with new constructions. That helps you to learn a lot about the other projects that you can use it there.
You're designing on all scales, from the city level down to the furniture level. You said once, we like it when custom furniture can be reduced to its essence, just enough to define the space, but at the same time, abstract enough to create possibilities. Very nice sentence, by the way. This can also be an old fireplace that is given a new life.
Well, we noticed that you do not need a lot of interventions in a room to make it work. Well, actually, sometimes you don't need any interventions, to be honest, but it's also fun to design something. We noticed a few years ago that a lot of us were over-designing the rooms, putting in too much furniture, putting in too much design furniture, or everything was fixed. And we noticed that it's more fun if you can create a space where the inhabitants can do whatever they like. And then if you can give them some guidance by floating, I don't know, just one closet or one piece of wood, then something happens. Then the kids can sit on it, play on it, or use it as a desk or whatever. So we believe that it's our job, or we can help facilitate what you can do with the room. But for instance, the fireplace, there's an old fireplace in the house. Why not see if you can appreciate it, even if it's at first glance an ugly old fireplace from the 60s or from the 80s? We all like the 60s, but nobody likes the 80s for the moment.
Not yet. It will come back.
Well, but we believe that if we find something less beautiful, for instance, that's not good enough a reason to get rid of it. If it's quality, then we like to reevaluate it and see, can we do something with it? Can we put something next to it? So the old and the new again become something stronger. Especially doing all these reconversions, the projects that are now on our table are houses from the 80s or from the 90s. They are not all 200-year-old townhouses. No, there are some ugly houses that need a lot of love now to create something new out of it. And then it's fun not to just look at it and, oh, this is just a house from the 80s and there's no quality in it. How can we make it look totally different? But again, start to play with what is there.
In the beginning, when we had really small houses, we were actually obliged to work with a lot of fixed furniture because it's sort of the principle of the caravan. When you don't have a lot of space and you put a lot of built-in furniture, you get possibilities for people because the rest of the room stays empty. When the houses were getting a little bit bigger, you don't need to do that because you can make small rooms where they can put the storage. You just put the furniture they need. And then people can, during their lifetime, they can buy new stuff they want. Because if everything is fixed, you put a stamp as an architect on the room, on the house itself that's so big. If it's not necessary, you can leave it over to the clients to live in it. I think we have a first step to do to create a home, a house, but still the people who are living there, who bring their life to us, they want some evolution, they want to change, people change. So give them the possibility to change some stuff in the house.
We had a question at the very beginning of our podcast. Good feeling or intellectual approach? Do both of you have a division of roles within your company, or do you decide everything together?
It's quite easy. Everything together.
Well, it's not easy.
But you decide everything together.
Yeah.
Even though it's not easy.
A lot of people ask us, certainly in the beginning, yeah, but you're lucky you found somebody to work with. And usually I said, yeah, but the way we work is that certainly the first 2-3 years, we were very critical with each other. Usually people, when they work together, they are like, they're not telling everything they feel about the other one. And we just did the other way around. But the good thing about us is that we always get into each other's point of views. So after 2-3 years, actually these discussions were a lot less because you work toward each other and you know, without even speaking, it's nonverbal. That's okay. I'm maybe talking too much or I'm too much on the back or whatever. It could be whatever kind of thing, but the decisions were still made together because we also have to feel that it's the right decision. And that's for us, that's the only way we think it's going to work.
We like to call playing it ping pong if we are designing. If Basil says, hey, then I try to do something with that, then Basil goes further with that idea, and that's how it goes back and forth. Most of the times, one of us gives an idea, and the other one doesn't do anything with it. And then, you know, the idea is not good enough, or it's not working. And you just try, give passes to each other, and see whatever comes back to you. And that works really well. And that's also the reason why no project is similar to another project. Because it's always ping-ponging between the two of us. You never know what you're going to get back. And then you start playing again with it.
And it's also in the managing of the office. Sometimes when one's something, I'm maybe not ready for it. And then other way around, so a few years later, but still.
Maybe there's one unwritten rule that the other one always takes and consider what the other one throws at him. Throwing at him is maybe the wrong word, but. If one of
Put on the table.
Yeah. If one of us feels that we want to do more competitions, like a few years ago, Basil came up with the idea, let's do some competitions. At that point, I was more into the buildings that we are doing, but I started to think with it. And then we had some talks and then you decide, oh, let's go for it. And that's how it goes with everything.
It's not overnight, these decisions.
You just never say just no or yes or whatever. Every opinion is something you consider and you talk about it.
Yeah, and it's very respectful.
In the beginning, it's intense because you have to talk a lot. But on the other hand, for instance, always designing the two of us, you could say, how can you make that profitable? Huh? Because it takes a lot of time. On the other hand, it can work really quick as well. Once you have an idea, it goes really fast.
Where do you get your inspiration from?
A little bit of everything, I think. Huh? Yeah. Certainly during the years, at the beginning, a lot of books, but it's not to copy, just to get this architectural knowledge. And then over the years, it's a little bit less because you have this sort of history in your back of your head. Yeah, it's a little bit from everything. And in architecture, it's certainly now the last few years, the old masters, not what the contemporaries are doing, but actually what these guys from 30, 50, 60, 70 years ago were doing.
We've always been really interested in everything that's being built around us, even well-known buildings, unidentified buildings or unknown buildings. Every time we see something in construction, we stopped, had a look, who's building here? What are they doing? Also very interested in colleagues, what they are doing. We don't understand architects that are just sitting on their islands. Not nowadays. We feel like it's more one big family. We all know what the other one is doing. And that's interesting, just sometimes to be inspired, but also just to see what the zeitgeist is. But it's also interesting to see what's happening in art, but it's also interesting to see what's happened with the economics. The news is equally important to give our architecture direction. And it's crisis after crisis after crisis, but that's interesting because that too will help our architecture to grow or to evolve in a certain direction.
So would it change the way you design?
Yes.
Yeah. For example, now wood is very expensive. So we try not to work with wood. That's, of course, going to have a lot of impact on the designs, but why not? Steel is as good. Bricks, concrete.
Also, for a moment now, here there's a problem that there's not enough people to fill in every job available. But that's something we feel the way we work with our contractors, with our clients, there's a lot of mutual respect. People still realize that it's people building for other people. And it's a big team. It's not the architects and our team. It's more than 100 people working together on this one building. And that's something we find very important. And that's something that comes from the zeitgeist. It's old school to just think we are the architect, or the client says, I am the client. No, that's not how it works anymore.
Sometimes when I see bigger projects, or when we talked with firms, that's Belgian firms that need architects to work on bigger projects, and we established how we worked, a small office, they actually looked at us to say, no, that's not a good way. You have to tell them what to do, and it's going to be like this. We were pretty young. It was like 10 years ago. And we're like, okay, are we so mistaken by our approach? And then during these 10 years, we certainly are really strongly believing that what we do is a good way. Of course, we have our vision. But the vision, you discuss it with these people, they're going to build it. So if they're not feeling good doing it, you're going to ask them why. And then they're going to give you an explanation. And together, you work on the details so that they feel comfortable and we can go further. And if it's something visually different, why not? Again, it's a design process. It's not because we drew it on paper that it should be like this. We're going to evaluate it and see, oh, that's a good point. If we do it like this, and now this detail, we can take it and that part of the building and that, and maybe the furniture. Well, don't do it in wood. We will do it in steel because the steel is now a bigger part of the project. So it's a flow. It's something that grows. That's what we like about it. It's working together.
But we did a competition to do some city planning projects, and we were explaining our vision that it's based on dialogue. They find it really strange. So it didn't match.
No.
And now we feel that 10 years later, it's actually the way it works now, through this dialogue.
We'll see for the bigger projects.
Okay, to conclude our podcast, one final personal question. Which contemporary building would you like to have designed?
There are a few.
For me personally?
Yeah, go for it.
The tea house of CISA.
Yeah.
That building still blows us away. I can't even understand how he designed it.
And also his swimming pool, not much further. It's completely different, but also how it connects with the border between the water, the rocks, and the streets. It's a little bit like Casa Malaparte. Sometimes when you have a naked piece of land, you always ask yourself as an architect, if a client would come and ask you to build somewhere on a beautiful location, would you do it? First reaction is no. Why should you? It's beautiful as this. But they made something that's so strong that even the place itself becomes much stronger than before. And that is something that's hopefully one day we realize this level of architecture, because it brings something to it. It's not tearing it down. It's making it much more beautiful.
That is a very nice way to end our discussion. Thank you very much for your time and your inspiring words. So it's goodbye from us now. Until the next episode of Jung Architecture Talks, Jung's Architecture Podcast.